In this episode of Movie Rollers, we review the G-rated Wreck-It Ralph and the R-rated The Sessions. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well. Hello, everyone.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
So, what's for lunch?
Yeah, what is for lunch? Oh, we just had lunch. We had paninis.
And I squashed my finger between the panini maker.
Oh, did you burn it or did it?
No,
did you
thank God. I was cleaning it and then I didn't realize that my thumb got left in the corner.
Oh, see, this is why I stay out of the kitchen. It's far too easy to get injured in there. So much easier.
And you're so fragile.
The kitchen is far more dangerous than like washing the car or hiking or like, I would rather be doing some of those.
When you think about it, everything in the kitchen can kill you.
It's true. Absolutely. Actually, it's true.
There's gas, there's electricity,
there's water
blades,
and gas and water and electricity.
And they're sharp. Yeah, they're sharp blades.
Yeah, it's a nightmare of a place.
Boiling water. Yes.
All right. So we have two movies to talk about today. They couldn't be more different. We have the animated movie Wreck-It Ralph. And then we're going to talk about the very adult-themed The Sessions. So I think Wreck-It Ralph is for me to introduce. I'll jump in there if that's okay. It's a movie about a character, Ralph, who is tired of being overshadowed by Fix-It Felix. He's a video game character. Ralph is the bad guy that goes around smashing up buildings and destroying things, and Felix is the little guy that fixes everything. Ralph decides that he's tired of being the bad guy, so takes matters into his own hands and sets off on a game-hopping journey across the arcade through every generation of video games to prove that he has what it takes to be a hero. The movie stars the voice talent of John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman, Jane Lynch, and a few others, Ed O'Neill, Adam Carolla. So, guys, what did you think of Wreck-It Ralph? Rashmi.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Disney out Pixar's Pixar. This is one of the most adorable, fun, and sweet films that you will see this year. Love, love, loved this movie.
So I should, by way of full disclaimer, say that this is a film that has virtually nothing to identify with in terms of its story. It is set in the world of the classic vintage video games, and I did not expect to get much out of it because I did not grow up with them, and they're as foreign to me right now as a five-year-old today might find them. But the film makes one decision that makes everything I have said irrelevant. It decides it is going to be about a friendship at its core. And it stays genuine to the development of that friendship. And for that alone, it comes out a winner. When a movie has this much heart, the setting of the story just does not matter. I didn't expect to, but I really like this movie.
Come on, gamer.
So I come from the opposite world of Yazdi. I grew up with video games and the arcade was very much my home for many years. So I actually wanted a little bit more 8-bit nostalgia. And do you know what 8-bit means? It's those old video games that they have a certain look, two-dimensional, very blocky, pixelated characters. I wanted a lot more nostalgia in it. Having said that, like you, Yazdi, none of that was actually relevant because this wasn't a movie about video games. It was simply a backdrop about a great friendship story, like you said. This was very enjoyable, tons of heart, and a very simple but enjoyable plot.
Yeah, I think that to me, this was very reminiscent of Toy Story, but it was different enough to set itself apart. And I love the fact they use different types of animation mixed together. So it felt like you got some of that 2D, you know, video game type animation and then the full-fledged animation. And, you know, the story was very predictable, but it was excellent. And this is just a real feel-good winner.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's because I choose now consciously not to read up too much about these movies before I actually see them. So I went in not knowing anything about the movie. And I honestly thought it was one of these throwaway, you know, movies that comes out, you know, they just try to buy into the, you know, the little preteen, you know, film audience. And I really, it was maybe because I had zero expectations for it that you know, as I was watching it, I started feebly smiling in the first half hour. And then, you know, I was kind of chuckling loudly. I was even embarrassed because a lot of the movie is actually set in this candy land. You know, it's a big portion of this movie is full of, like, you know, chocolate rivers. And,
I know.
You know, and it was all so goofy. I mean, it almost sounds like something out of Barney, you know,
yeah.
That I shouldn't, you know, enjoy, let alone, you know, strongly resonate with. But once it became about this, the relationship between the John C. Reilly character and the Sarah Silverman character, you know, against my better judgment, I became invested in it. And it was a pleasure for me to see, from that point onwards, to see the movie not fumble at all. I kept thinking, oh, you know, this is too perfect. It's not going to work. You know, they're going to, you know, miss a step. They're going to fall. But it kind of carried through to the end. And it has a very simple, laid-back story behind a lot of frenetic energy. The underlying story is very simple, and I liked it for that.
But I think the thing that made it really special for me, and I'm in no way as much of a gamer as Joe is, but definitely I've played a lot of the games that they show, and to watch, you know, like Ryu and Ken having a drink in a bar.
These are characters from the Street Fighter video game.
Yeah, or, you know, like the Death Star music playing in the background. It was just these tiny little touches were just, they made me giggle and they made me smile from ear to ear. But more than anything, I just felt like these characters had such depth and, they were such well-rounded characters. Each one of them had such a clear mission and such a great arc, and just, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, Rashmi, that Disney had out-Pixar'd Pixar. Well, John Lasseter, famously of Pixar, now of Disney Pixar, had a big hand in this movie. And I think the way that the plot unfolded was very Pixar-like. I mean, it had that very clear blueprint of how to keep a story engaging and exciting all the way through it. It reminded me most, in a weird way, of Bug's Life. And I think maybe that was just because we had the Sergeant Calhoun character from the, you know, the 3D shooter video game, who was, you know, shooting alien bugs. But it had that same feel to me. That said, it didn't feel quite as sophisticated as many of the Pixar greats. You know, having said that, you know, Pixar is not infallible. You know, they've put out movies such as Cars 2, but certainly it had that feel to it.
Yeah, that's just the one of the genius scenes that really stand out for me is all of the characters, all of the baddies in all of the games sitting around in this kind of, like, you know, Bad Guys Anonymous type therapy session. And it's so adult, the themes they're talking about, they're so adult, but they're kind of dressed up in a children's film. And I think that's what I loved. I just, that really resonated with me.
Yeah, I think one of the things the film does is it has an uncannily good sense in terms of recruiting the voice talent here. I mean, on the face of it, John C. Reilly seems like a really odd choice for an animated movie. I mean, I really like him in movies, but I don't think he has particularly good, I've never thought of him as having particularly good voice talent. And actually, while I was watching the character of Ralph through much of the movie, for some strange reason, I kept thinking of Seth Rogen.
Me, you know, too. Me too.
He even looks like Seth Rogen a lot. And I kept thinking, oh, I was sure this was Seth Rogen.
Me too.
And then after the halfway point, I was so involved with this character that I realized, no, this has to be voiced by somebody who has more artistic heft than Seth Rogen does. And then I was surprised to find it was John C. Reilly, because he, you know, he really makes it work. And then the Sarah Silverman character, I mean, you know, when she's rid of the usual snark, which is always hovering around her in real life, you know, when she sheds that snark, the rest of the character is so much fun.
Yes.
And it just worked. I mean, that, yeah, good stuff.
I didn't like the main character, Ralph, for about the first third of the movie. I didn't think he was that nice a guy. I mean, he's supposed to be the bad guy, but, you know, in this particular story arc, we are supposed to empathize with him and his predicament. And I didn't like him very much. He became likable when they introduced the Sarah Silverman character, who brought out all of his, you know, good behavior and all of his good nature. But the Sarah Silverman character, what was her name?
Vanilla
Poodle Doodle or something.
Vanellope.
No wonder I couldn't remember it.
Vanellope Poodlebomb something.
Yeah, her voice, I knew it was Sarah Silverman. That voice was unmistakable. But when you don't have that, like you say, Yasdi, when there's none of that acidic tone in her words, the character is adorable.
Okay, we ready to wind this one up? Universal love? Yasdi.
So to be sure, most of this film is silly. I'm talking about 3 to 5 year old silly, like Barney silly. But really, it doesn't matter, like as I said before, because every relationship in the film is built on a really solid, genuine foundation. And I think the best animated films understand that it is not what you see, but it is what you feel that matters. And I felt a lot. This film really gets that. It reminded me, like you, Rashmi, I have it in my notes, I swear, before you said it, it reminded me a lot of Toy Story. And that's fine company to be in.
Yeah.
It certainly, in my opinion, is the best animated movie I've seen this year so far. It may be, you know, a tenth as visually accomplished as Brave, but no matter, it makes up with an abundance of heart. This is the film Pixar should have made this year, not Brave. I give it 8.5 out of 10, and I'm going to back it down to 8.
Joe?
So I only have one criticism of the movie, and I think it was a little too simple. You know, it's hard to criticize a kid's film for being too simple. So I just think they missed a little bit of an opportunity to target adults of a certain age, like me, who grew up with video games. I think there was a lot more to be exploited there in terms of the movie that people like us wanted to see. So in terms of telling adults to go see this, you know, I would recommend that perhaps if you've got, you know, nieces or nephews to take along to the movie, then go along with them and you'll have a good time. I wouldn't necessarily recommend this to all adults who want to go see an animated movie per se. So in the way that I would one of the Pixar greats. So for me, I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10 too. You know, it was good. It gets a definite thumbs up, but just a little bit of a missed opportunity for game fanatics like myself.
So if you're not a game fanatic like Joe and you're just a regular adult like Yasdi and I, then I recommend you go because this is the most darling animated film that you'll see this year. I loved Wreck-It Ralph. I'm going to give this a 9.
So you guys both like this more than Brave?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Hands down.
Leagues ahead.
What?
And Joe, I'm living proof. I'm living, breathing proof that if you're not a gamer, you'll still enjoy this movie a lot. Maybe you might not get half the stuff from the movie, but yeah, I think just the emotional resonance here is so much stronger than in Brave.
It's so cute. And it's funny.
I think I liked Merida more than Ralph. I think that's what it comes down to. But yeah.
I liked Vanellope more than Merida.
Vanellope was cute. She was very cute.
And even the Jane Lynch character.
She was funny.
She was funny. And then Felix was funny. They were all good.
There was a lovely little exchange between Felix and the sergeant.
Yeah.
that was a big high point for me in the movie. Good. All right. So let's dismiss all the children from the podcast now, because we are going to completely switch gears and talk about the movie The Sessions. Now, Yasdi, I think this is one that you saw at the Toronto Film Festival, and we've spoken about it briefly on Movie Wallahs, but we didn't really give it the full three-way treatment. So if you wouldn't mind... Just
no pun intended.
Well,
oh God!
So Rashmi's taking it there. Okay, so this is where we are. Make sure the kids are not listening now. So yeah, yes, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a reintroduction to The Sessions, and then we can all talk about it.
Yeah, so The Sessions comes to us already having gathered considerable buzz at film festivals. The movie is based on the real life story of Mark O'Brien, a Berkeley area poet/journalist who, after being afflicted with childhood polio, needed to live in an iron lung for most of his waking hours and had no usable motor movements below his neck. Confined to a stretcher all his adult life and with caretakers around him to help him with everyday activities, Mark O'Brien still went on to obtain his degree at UC Berkeley. Obviously unable to do many things that most of us can, he realized in his mid-30s that the one thing he could not live without, having accomplished in his life, was to have a physical relationship. The movie begins at this point in his life and covers his relationships with those around him, chiefly with the sex therapist who tries to assist him with fulfilling his desire to lose his virginity. Helen Hunt plays the therapist who scheduled 6 sessions to try and help him out. originally called The Surrogate, then Six Sessions, and then finally Just The Sessions. So this movie is based on a Mark O'Brien article published in the magazine The Sun entitled On Seeing a Sex Surrogate, and the film is directed by Ben Levin, who himself is a polio survivor and who incidentally was present after the screening of The Sessions at the Toronto Film Festival. Mm. So this movie is getting a lot of buzz. Do you guys think it deserves it?
So I like this movie, but I didn't understand the point of it. I mean, I understand why there's so much hype because of this incredible performance by John Hawkes. I think, in fact, Oscar-worthy without a doubt. But it generally made me really uncomfortable because this is really a darker version of The 40-Year-Old Virgin with really superb acting and dialogue.
Except for the fact that it's absolutely true. And yes, you mentioned the article. I actually, after seeing the movie, went and read the article. It's available online. You can just Google for it. It's right there. Because in large part, due to my reaction to this movie, which, like you, Rashmi, I think the performances were really what stole the show here. But I had a really deep connection with the movie and the character and the story that was trying to be told. And I wanted to learn more about this guy, this incredible guy who had lived for many years with polio, and despite his physical impediments, had gone on to achieve so much. I mean, he was a poet, he was a journalist, he studied and he accomplished something incredible for somebody who can literally only move his head. So, the movie, I think, was a fantastic portrayal of him. I have one minor nitpick, which I'll come to later, but overall, this is a great movie for anyone that loves movies.
Yeah, Mark O'Brien's life was also the basis for the 1996 Academy Award-winning documentary short called Breathing Lessons, which also is available online. And like you, Joe, I didn't read the article, but I watched the documentary. It's only 25 minutes long. And I think when people might hear us talk about this movie, or when they even read about this movie, they'll all roll their eyes going, here's another movie about some guy who had these insurmountable physical disabilities who somehow went on to prevail. And I think the reason why this movie was successful for me was because it precisely abandons all the tropes and all the traps of those kinds of movies, My Left Foot and what was that movie with Jeffrey Rush for which he won the
lead? Shine.
Shine, I think this movie kind of really never sees the main character as somebody who's pitiable. The movie never sees this character as somebody who deserves our pity. And the movie actually goes out of its way on multiple points to actually point out that a lot of the things that this main character is struggling with is things that others who don't have these physical disabilities also struggle with. So I really like the part. I like that this movie, being what it is, it's not about how you would think it would be about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. I mean, I actually found myself a little unsettled by that because I was expecting to see more of a sympathetic movie, but the tone becomes immediately clear when you read anything by Mark O'Brien. And in much the same way that the movie, uses something of a comedic take on his predicament, which it does at times, I found, feel a little lighthearted and inappropriately lighthearted. This is a difficult situation for a human being to endure and to go through. Mark O'Brien himself, at least in what I have read in his writing, is very much like that. He uses humor in a way, in some ways, to make you more comfortable with what's going on. And I think that's where I have a little bit of a nitpick with the movie, in that I think this sweet tone, this humor that's done all the way through, to me felt like a kind of a concession to make me feel more comfortable as an audience member watching what was going on, as opposed to something that I think I should inherently be uncomfortable with. This is a difficult human experience, and one that I inherently want to relate to and feel the emotional trauma of it, whereas he's not allowing me to do that. And the movie doesn't allow you to do that because its tone is so, it's almost lighthearted and sweet, even though it tackles a very serious subject.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I'm glad it does, because I think if it had the other angle, Joe, that you were talking about, then this would be a completely unwatchable movie.
Yeah, I mean,
what's interesting to me is that both of you, both Yazdi, you in the introduction, and then Joe, you on reading all of the extra information or doing your research, came up with all of these things about Mark O'Brien that none of us know about. And so really, if you just go and watch the movie, it's a very one-note movie. It's about a guy getting laid.
Well, it's about the article that he wrote. The basis of the story is the article that he wrote about his feelings as an adult and not being in a position to have a sexual relationship with somebody. So it is very one note if you look at it in that regard. It's not meant to be a biography of him.
Okay.
It's meant to be a portrayal of an experience that he had that the filmmakers thought was worthy of sharing.
Okay. So for that purpose, then, if you're just going in for the 90 minutes or 110 minutes, however long the film is, then all you're getting is this sexual experience. And it's kind of strange to me. And I think the problem, other than that, so there's that piece, the bigger problem I had with the movie was Helen Hunt's character. So it was just totally, I was totally unconvinced that this woman who is supposed to be a sex therapist to help other people almost falls in love with this character. It was unbelievable to me. And I can imagine that someone who is in a more disadvantaged, it's difficult for me to then believe that this person who's a smart sex therapist would have such a relationship with someone who's so disadvantaged. It was just too unbelievable. And that's where it started to fall down. And so I was kind of thinking to myself, whose movie is this? Is this Helen Hunt's movie or is this Mark O'Brien's movie? And so if I look at it from Helen Hunt's point of view, I think, gosh, that's a really sad story that she's living through. And if I'm viewing it through his eyes, I'm thinking, well, I just don't want to watch this movie. So
let's talk about this. I mean, I think for the reason that you didn't like it, I think that's exactly the reason why the movie elevated as being something more than just a garden variety of movie of this kind, because we've never seen this before. We have never seen a sex therapist, for one thing, in movies, or even understand the moral and emotional implications of being a sex therapist. I mean,
and
what? Go on.
Sex surrogate, not sex therapist, because there is a difference.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, so what are the ethics? What are the motivations and what are the conflicts associated with a person whose trained work involves having sex with clients and who receives monetary compensation for it? And Helen Hunt's character makes it very clear repeatedly in the movie that she is a surrogate. She's not a prostitute. And I think precisely because of what you said, Rashmi, she, in order to not get involved with the people, she has these sets of rules. She's very methodical about it. She's almost initially, you know, very hands-offish. You know, when she dictates her notes, it's all very clinical. She's very clear from the start in saying she will only have 6 sessions, no more. And, you know, I think the movie taps on this thing that when a sex surrogate builds necessarily difficult relationships with the person being treated, how can the physicality of it not bleed into emotional dependencies? And I think the movie kind of refers to that in terms of the fact that her husband initially thinks of her as being a saint, as somebody who goes and helps people out, you know, in this very unconventional way. But as the movie progresses, he starts resenting her for it. And she herself unexpectedly starts, you know, how can you not have sex with someone repeatedly over a period of sessions and not be emotionally attached to that person?
Right.
And I think the movie does a great job of tapping into that.
It does, Yazdi, but then that would almost have to infer that this was her first ever client or her second ever client. And clearly this is a person who is experienced and has done this before. So for me personally, that's where it totally fell down.
So wait, I think the reason you struggle with that is A, the time course. The movie doesn't allow us to really explore their relationship that they form over time. And B, I think they were trying to get across that this guy who was, I think, who had this injury from a young age, polio, was inherently a very lovable person. And it's very difficult for you to be intimate with somebody who is really at heart a wonderful person who has this terrible affliction. So I think it was trying to tackle that. I think it was a little clumsy. That storyline happened a little too quickly. That turn happened a little too quickly. And that I do agree with you, Rashmi, affected its plausibility. But I think the themes that they explored there were valid and right on the money.
Yeah. I think the other problem I had was William H. Macy. Now, William H. Macy gave this great performance, and when is he never excellent in any movie that he stars in? But I felt the role was too contrived, and really it was set up just to give us exposition about the story. So I find that all, it was all too neat and tidy.
I'll grant you that. I think it is a little too neat and tidy, and I you know, who knows what the real Mark O'Brien was like. But I think the movie makes a deliberate choice for this not to be a biopic. I mean, this is a movie which starts at a particular period in time when he makes his decision that he wants to have a physical relationship and ends soon afterwards, you know, after he goes through this whole process. And it just takes the snapshot of the people in his life around that time. And, you know, he was a very devout Catholic, and, you know, he could not go ahead and, you know, explore this without getting some kind of, in, you know, some kind of discussion about it at the church level. And I think that's where the William H. Macy character came in for me. So I agree there was something a bit pat about that whole relationship between him and William H. Macy, but it didn't bother me. I think the whole movie is a little pat. But I don't know, maybe it's the sentimental part of me, but I think people really shy away from uncomfortable topics. As it is, people are really shy in dealing with the physically disabled. You know, everybody feels compassion for them. Everybody, you know, feels love for them. But nobody wants to really know about the nitty-gritty about what things they struggle with, and let alone talk about the sexuality of the disabled.
Yeah, but honestly, we don't want to do that with normal people.
I know, but I commend this movie that it gets in a place, you know, which is such a nobody wants to think about how somebody who is physically disabled has sex in the movie. It's because Mark O'Brien himself was so candid and so open about it that the movie chooses exactly the same path. And it absolutely puts us in these very uncomfortable situations. But I think therein lies its strength, because it elicits this reaction. I'll just say one other thing. There is this writer that I grew up with in India. His name is Firdaus Kanga, who had this kind of congenital disease from birth where his bones were very brittle. I mean, if he fell, every bone in his body would rupture. So he was confined to a wheelchair his whole life. And he wrote this book called Heaven on Wheels, where he actually traveled on a wheelchair and he wrote about it. And then he wrote another book called Trying to Grow. And like Mark O'Brien, this writer did exactly the same thing. He was, you know, painfully candid about his sexual experiences. And it really threw people off. They were not prepared to read this. And he was almost shunned by the Indian press and by the Indian journalists, because they were like, I don't want to know about this. But I almost commend people for saying this also happens in life. You know, this is the truth. This is how it happens. Deal with it. So anyway.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I remember when you mentioned this film from Toronto Film Festival and you commenting on Holly Hunter, and there's a lot of nudity in this film.
You mean Helen Hunt?
Helen Hunt. What did I say?
Holly Hunter.
Holly Hunter.
Although Holly Hunter is very nude in a lot of movies too.
Okay. So I remember you speaking from Toronto Film Festival about Helen Hunt. And, you know, the nudity, and there's a lot of nudity in this film. In my mind, you know, I guess I'm the prude of the group. I just didn't feel the need for it.
Oh,
it was too much for me.
No, I mean, Yasda, you described her performance as fearless. And I think it was absolutely needed, given the overall tone of the movie, to be that candid about the sexual experience that the movie was trying to depict. Because otherwise it would have been too Disney-fied. It would have been too blindside. But I think we had to recognize that this is something that is a difficult subject to deal with on screen. And so that was, I think, their way of saying, look, you know, this is a movie about this one man's sexuality. This movie needs to be frank. We need to be able to have a frank discussion about this. And that's how they did it.
Yeah. I think this is going to get her a Best Supporting Actress nomination.
For good reason.
And she deserves it, yes. You
just
don't?
For taking her clothes off.
It wasn't clothes off, though. It's that was irrelevant. That's not why I liked her performance, because you can see naked ladies anywhere you like. It's just the performance here was, A, it was fearless, B, it was emotionally deep. Really, she was very brave here. It wasn't the fact that she got her kit off. I mean, you know, Showgirls wasn't an Oscar-winning movie because girls took their clothes off.
Yeah, but they were young girls. This is an older woman. No. I just, anyway, from my point of view, from the brood of the group, it wasn't required. We didn't need to see the landing strip. That's all I'm saying.
You see, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that, but but here's the thing. I'm trying to imagine a PG-13 version of this movie, and I think it just wouldn't have the same impact on me. And I don't mean the emotional impact. I think a major part of the movie is making the audience feel that they're eavesdropping on something that they're not meant to see. They want us to benefit the awkwardness of the relationship, how difficult this must have been from her perspective and how difficult it must have been from his perspective. And the only way you feel that is by seeing them naked like that, in that fashion. It really conveys that awkwardness and that sense of, oh my God, I shouldn't be here. And I think if they'd taken away from it, the movie wouldn't have worked.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to talk about with Helen Hunt is she's a most peculiar, you know, screen presence. I don't know if I love her. I really loved her in Mad About You, you know, and then I liked her in other movies and so
Pay
forth.
Pay It Forward, I think.
Pay It Forward. But there is a darkness about her character. There is something very irritable about her. And I think as she has evolved as an actor, this has become more and more part of her persona. There's something very, you know, she projects this image of a person who, if you say something wrong, she'll bite your head off. You know, there's this something very, you know, closed off about her. And for once in this movie, it really works within the context of this movie, because she starts off as a person who is very, very professional, very hands-offish. You know, this is what I'm going to do. This is how the sessions are going to be. This is what you're going to pay me. These are the rules. You can do this. You can't do that. But then the whole arc, and I do agree that turning point comes very quickly, but there's that scene in the movie where she says goodbye to him in the car, and she's saying bye to him. And she really projects, you know, a person who cannot bear the thought of saying goodbye to somebody with whom she's so emotionally connected, and it's heartbreaking. And it's all in her face, and it's all in, you know, how she conveys the sadness of leaving somebody she's so connected with. And I think she deserves the Oscar for that.
Yeah. I agree with all of those points, Yasti.
I'm shaking my head.
And I do want to say about John Hawkes. I mean, you know, I looked him up on IMDb. He's been in movies for 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay. He's been acting for a quarter century. He was in You and Me and Everybody We Know. He was in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. You know,
Winter's Bone.
And Winter's Bone, he was this horrible, you know, really despicable individual. And here he just transforms himself into this wisp of a person, you know, who is kind of shrunked and barely a coil. And, you know, even physically, he doesn't seem much under the stretcher, and you know, he still projects intelligence and humor and a person who laughs at himself. And this kind of stuff can go wrong 100 ways. So I think the movie definitely...
Amazing performance.
Yeah.
There's some good performances here.
All right, let's wind this one up. Joe, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I'm not going to restate anything that I've already said here. I think the movie, at the, you know, the bottom line is this movie touched me to my core. I think it's an actor's showcase for both of the leads. It made me smile. It made me weep. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow. Yazdi.
So this film comes to us as the movie guaranteed to earn acting nominations for John Hawkes and Helen Hunt. And after having seen it, I'm not about to argue about it. In fact, I hope nobody listens to our podcast, because I think we might have already set up too many expectations or informed them too much about the movie. I think this movie is best seen with the minimum of expectations. I think this is a small film that evokes some very big issues. I'm better for having seen it. I liked it a lot. I also give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm not as in love with the movie as Joe and Yazdi. But you know, this is a movie worth seeing for the incredible performances and the physical transformation, which will almost guarantee John Hawkes the Oscar for Best Actor. But be prepared. For me, this felt like The 40-Year-Old Virgin without any Apatow crudeness and a few less laughs. Oh, my score is 6 out of 10.
Okay. You didn't shed a tear, Rashmi? You didn't shed a tear?
No, I was just uncomfortable.
That therein lies the achievement.
Yeah. Don't therein, you see?
For you to feel truly uncomfortable is a difficult thing to do, especially when a movie is really trying hard, I think, to provide an overall tone that is sweet. I mean, that's, you know, my only downside with the movie is it had this sweetness to it all the way through, except for these very intimate moments. And that's, you know, the uncomfortableness is an achievement, I think. We were meant to squirm.
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with the fact that this movie can make you feel a certain way. I just think it was a missed opportunity in some ways. And you're right, we didn't go and see the biopic of, you know, Mark O'Brien, but it was just so one note, and then it had all those flaws for me.
Okay.
Fair enough. Let us know what you think about this movie. Mail at movieworldlust.com. Follow us on Facebook. We have a pretty decent-sized community there. We're approaching 500. We've not yet crossed that threshold, but tell all your friends about Movie Rollers, and hopefully we will soon. Love to get your interactions on the site. We do what we can to check it daily, so you know, great way to reach us there. twitter.com/movierollers as well, and don't forget our website with not just podcasts but also articles about movies, film festivals, and anything else that we choose to post. So until our next episode, it's too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me
and me
and me as well.